This is the Recency Bias. It's your morning after mini pod once again. A true morning after mini pod. My apologies for it being a little late. It was just a 9 o'clock start in Cowtown on Thursday night for your Montreal Canadiens, but I was sleepy by the time the game finished because I'd stayed up so late the previous evening. And so, thought I wouldn't be able to bring any energy to it. So, sorry for the delay. I know some people like to have it ready when they're up in the morning and getting ready for the day. I've got my particular podcast that I like to play in that scenario. And, you know, ideally I'd have these for you. I didn't last night. And you can tell I feel a little bad about it. But here we are on Friday morning. I don't know about how the weather is where you are, but we've got a beauty Friday morning here in Toronto. Give a little hope. A little bit of hope these days as winter comes to an end to some degree. It'll roar back for a few more weeks. I know. But feeling good, despite the fact that your Montreal Canadiens lost on Thursday night. And let me say this off the top of this one. There's a term, and I hear it more when I listen to basketball media. It's you won't hear basketball players say it so much, but even they might nod to what is called a schedule loss. And I, frankly, that's what happened to the Habs on Thursday night. We'll get into it. I'll talk about the game. But I never think there's certain games in the year that before you even play them, you can circle and say that's probably not going to be a win. Circumstances are not in the team's favor. These are all professional athletes, all elite, and sometimes circumstances just get stacked against you, and it's going to be tough to come out with a win. And that was the case for the Habs on Thursday night. It just was. They played the latest game they'd ever played on Wednesday. They arrived in Calgary at like 3 or 4 in the morning, got into their hotels, meetings were at noon, so you're just off. And then it's another late start. Backup goalies in. Yes, Allen's been fantastic for the Habs this season. Like, it's not like, oh no, we don't have a chance because Allen's here. But it's all set up for a schedule loss. And the way this one shook out, that's exactly what it was. A 2-1 loss that the Canadiens just didn't really have the legs for. And it's fine. And it's not something to panic over. And I think when you listen to the coaching staff after the game, Dom Duchamp was... it's not an excuse. These are just facts. The facts were they got in at 4. It was their schedule's off. They just played 3 games in 4 nights. Or this was the 3rd game in 4 nights. The schedule's been heavy, and this one was probably going to be an L. Besides any really something outstanding happening for the Canadiens, it was probably going to be a loss. And it was a loss. And it's not ideal, and you don't love to see it. But there's going to be losses that... the factors that are set in motion outside of your own control probably have more of an influence on the outcome of the game than the players themselves sometimes. And that was the case, I think, on Thursday night. So let's have at it. A 2-1 loss once again in Calgary. As I said, Allen getting the start, Markstrom getting the start for the Flames. And the question going into this one was, which new head coach will prevail? Dom Duchamp has had more time with his team after taking over a couple weeks ago. Daryl Sutter has been officially the head coach of the Flames for like a week now, but due to quarantine rules, couldn't get behind the bench until Thursday. So that was another factor against the Canadiens. The Flames playing in front of their new head coach for the first time, Daryl Sutter, in there. And it was a very Daryl Sutter game, that's for sure. Real clunky, muddled game. I'm sure Daryl Sutter loved it. So yes, the head coach that did prevail was Sutter. We had another interesting one. Romanov would be playing with Weber in this one. They played about 11 minutes together. A couple other defensemen did get a look with Weber on that quote-unquote, it's a second pairing now, second defensive pairing. And Romanov, yes, at times he looked overmatched. But at times, all the Canadiens looked a little overmatched on Thursday. So I still have confidence that, for the duration that Ben Sherratt is out, I think Romanov can probably step in and play with Shea Weber. Yes, there were some moments on Thursday that weren't handled ideally by the young Romanov, but that's going to happen with a young defenseman. I'm looking forward to seeing Romanov grow a little bit while Sharat's out, hopefully continues to pair with the captain. Another note on this one, and I thought this would have been an opportunity to get Arturi Lehkonen in the game. For all the reasons that I said off the top, that this was one of those schedule losses for the Canadiens. Lehkonen hasn't been playing recently. He's been the healthy scratch for the Habs since Anderson returned to the lineup. And for me, the thinking is, get those fresh legs in there. Why not? It's like when you bring in the guy late in the game in the soccer game. Get some fresh legs. Somebody who's got that little extra that the rest don't. And that would have been the case with Lehkonen. I would have liked to see Arturi Lehkonen. I know he's not like a game breaker, but in a game that it was 2-1, it was close in the end. Maybe having those fresh legs on the fourth line would have helped. Of course, the fourth line did score the only goal of the night, so you got that. But that's the one coaching decision I think I might have done differently if for some reason I was in charge and had no idea what I was doing besides thinking I should get Lehkonen in the lineup. Of course, for the Canadiens, it's another Tkachuk to deal with. Most nights in the North Division, in the Scotiabank North Division, there's a Tkachuk to contend with, and the Canadiens had another one, though it wasn't him that was the pain in the ass on Thursday. It was, of course, the second most hated player on this podcast, Milan Lucic. Number one remains Brad Marchand, of course, but the second most hated player in the league, Milan Lucic, as he fought Anderson. We'll get to that. Let's start at the beginning, first period. It was apparent from the get-go that the Flames were going to be a little bit more formidable of a foe than the Vancouver Canucks had been on the previous evening. That's for sure. The Flames looked much more engaged because, you know, one thing I didn't say on the podcast following the 5-1 win against the Canucks was, for all the credit I gave the Canadiens, it should have been mentioned, the Canucks were really bad in that game. They played a horrible hockey game, and it was apparent that the Flames were going to be at least a little better than the Canucks had offered up the night before. And it was clunky. It was clunky, like I said. It was a very Daryl Sutter game. You could tell the Canadiens were not the same team that they had been since Deschamps took over, where they looked like they had a little bit more energy in their legs. Absolutely was not the case, and I'm sure there was some strategy to that. You know, let's play a very defensive game. Let's be smart about this, conserve some energy, and take advantage of the opportunities when they present themselves. So very clunky, not all that entertaining. Another reason it was probably as tough to stay awake for the 9 o'clock start as it was the 11 o'clock start. And the Habs did get a late power play in the opening frame, but that one didn't even go the full distance of the 2 minutes as young Suzuki took the team took the too many men on the ice penalty, but it was mainly because of Suzuki playing a puck he probably shouldn't have as he was going to the bench. But all things considered, it wasn't bad. As I said, I went into this game expecting the Canadiens to lose. So for the shots to be even 6-6 and the score to be even at 0-0 after 20 minutes, it was pretty much mission accomplished for the Canadiens in the first 20. Not so much the case, though, in that middle frame. The Habs got caught trying not to take it too many men on the ice penalty after taking that one on the power play in the first. And in trying to not take the penalty, created a turnover, nice bit of passing from the Calgary Flames, and Josh Levo got his first of the night. And why do I say first of the night? Well, because a less than ideal pass, that's a nice way of saying a bad pass from Shea Weber right up the middle, was supposed to be to Kotkaniemi, didn't really find him all that accurately. Instead, it found Josh Levo, and the Flames were up 2-0 after two. Flames really showing that they were the better rested team, pushing hard in that second, outshot the Habs 14-5. It was kind of, the ice was really tilted in their favor, as was the score. 2-0 after 40. Into the final third and the final 20 minutes, Anderson and Lucic go at it. A fight, a good fight, a good heavyweight fight from two big boys. I think they're both like 6'3", 230 pounds. That's big. Lucic won the fight, and Josh Anderson, do not be fighting Lucic. Come on, man. You are way more valuable to us than Milan Lucic is to Calgary or the world in general. I didn't like that one bit. I do not want Josh Anderson injuring his hand, Ellabène Chiarot, by punching Lucic in the face, even if it did do things to Lucic. And Lucic won that fight anyway. So don't do that, Josh Anderson. That's my other bit of coaching advice. Don't fight Milan Lucic. You mean too much to us. Three games without Anderson was rough. Getting him back was nice. He's important to the Canadians. And fighting Milan Lucic is not what I want him to be doing. Just don't engage Milan Lucic. Just don't. He's nothing anymore. On the other hand, maybe it gave the Habs some energy. I'm not really a believer, by the way, that fights give a team energy, but maybe on a night, last night I was thinking, like, human emotion, when you got no legs, and you're feeling like you're dragging, and one of your teammates fights one of the most hated opponents the Habs have had in a decade. Maybe the adrenaline gets up for those final 10 minutes. Maybe it helps, but generally I tend not to believe that. Anyway, the Canadians did score off it. Shea Weber, not with a cannon, but with... it looked like he knew what he was doing. It was a soft shot at the net with Corey Perry in front. Of course Corey Perry was in front. Corey Perry's always in front of the net. Beautifully positioned. A beautiful bit of a deflection from his soft, soft hands. Corey Perry, really impressing me these last few games, didn't he? It's 2-1, and suddenly, with 10 minutes to go, the Canadians have some life. Maybe they can pull this one off in the way that you would expect them to be able to come back if they were going to come back in one of these games, which is to just keep it close, get a lucky break, and take advantage. And they got that break with 6 minutes left. Mangiapane, which I just like saying. He took a high-sticking penalty. That opened the door for the Canadians to tie this thing up. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. They weren't able to capitalize on that power play. And with just over 2 minutes left, Paul Byron would take a less-than-ideal, that's another way of saying bad, penalty, slashing. That ended pretty much all hopes for the Habs of pulling Allen and getting the extra attacker and maybe forcing something. So that's how it would end. 2-1. Canadians had about 45 seconds of 6-on-5 at the end, but not able to do what they were hoping to do late. And look, it would have been 1 point. There was no way this team was headed for 3-on-3 overtime and was going to win against Johnny Gaudreau and the gang. That just wasn't going to happen, but it would have been nice to get that point by forcing OT. Didn't happen. Canadians lose 2-1. And, yeah, that's where that one sits. I don't want to put too much on this game because I think it's a schedule loss. I liked what I saw from the Habs in the third, and they kind of gave some pushback. They kind of made it, they gave themselves a chance. They weren't able to capitalize, unfortunately, but all things considered, it was fine. Now, you lose on Saturday night, you got to be ready on Saturday night. You can't look the same on Saturday. There's no excuses for that one. Everybody is... playing a lot of games, yes, fatigue could be a factor, but it can't be a factor the way it was on Thursday. They got to come out and they got to be ready to go. And yeah, now the loss on Thursday makes Saturday a... we need a term for a game that's not a must win, but an important win. I guess we could call it an important win. Because they got the Jets. You know, this road trip is far from over. They've got two more against the Jets next week as they come back. So more late starts. Still no 7 o'clock starts till... well, I guess there's a 7 o'clock start on Saturday, but next week, 8 o'clock starts, something like that, as they're in Winnipeg. So later nights will continue, road trip will continue, and it would be very important to get 2 points, put up a nice convincing win, split the series with the Flames come Saturday. It's how you see baseball. Baseball fans are used to the series. You lose the first, well, you got to go back and get that second one. That becomes important. Split the series with the Flames. Keep them behind you in that race for the fourth playoff spot. Yeah, put up a reaction that says, yes, we didn't have the legs on Thursday. We're here to play on Saturday. So we'll be paying attention to that, obviously, Saturday night. Get you one for Sunday morning, one of these bad boys of the Midi Pod. Parting thoughts? Oh, yeah, the Travis Yost, TSN, had an interesting... he does a lot of, like, analytics writing for TSN, Travis Yost. And he had a post up... I think we already retweeted it from the Montreal Bias podcast Twitter account, at the Montreal Bias, about, are Petrie and Edmondson the top pairing in the entire NHL? Maybe not, but definitely the best pairing in the Canadian division. There's no, I guess there could be some debate, but I don't think there's much room for debate. Petrie and Edmondson have been fantastic. And obviously this podcast has been happy to throw flowers at Jeff Petrie, the Petrie for Norris campaign, big part of rabidhabs.com content so far this season. But I've also been, I've made Edmondson a whipping boy at times, and I think that's been justified, especially in the early parts of the season, but as a system defenseman, and as he's settling into the system, and he's had two coaches to play under now, Edmondson, he's, the numbers say he's been very effective, and maybe a contributing factor in the incredible season that Jeff Petrie's having. So, maybe Edmonton doesn't always pass, Edmondson doesn't always pass my eye test, but the numbers, they don't lie. This has been an elite pairing in every way, shape, and form in terms of shutting down the opposition, and they're often having to shut down the top lines from the opposition. And even, you know, right across the board, they have pretty much consistency of strength in every contest that they're forced up against. So, hat tip to Edmondson, I guess is what I'm saying here. He's doing things that perhaps we're not seeing as much, and his mistakes show up a little bit more than others might, but, or, you know, maybe you want to say Petrie's carrying that duo entirely, but if that's the case, then Petrie definitely deserves the Norris, because that would suggest he's not only scoring at an insane rate, leading all defensemen, but he's also carrying another defenseman who's weak. That seems like it's probably too much to believe that Jeff Petrie is doing all on his own. So I'm going to give some credit to Edmondson. Anyways, check that article out by Travis Yost if you disagree with me, if you're hearing what I'm saying here and being like, no, Edmondson sucks. He's been a problem. I want to agree with you too, but the numbers are interesting. Check that out. The other top two, I got top two listed twice here in my parting thoughts. The other is, I found it funny with the big game between Toronto and Winnipeg on Thursday night. I was Austin Matthews with a hell of a winning goal, unfortunately. The conversation throughout the North has been hilarious as far as who are the top two in the Canadian division, because it was clearly Montreal and Toronto were the top two teams at the beginning of the season, and the rest of the way the other teams would have to fight over the other two spots. Then, in the middle there, Toronto and Edmonton are the top two teams. Edmonton beat up the Leafs a few times in a row, and that was going to be the conversation, Edmonton and Toronto. And then now, it's the Jets and the Leafs. Now, the Leafs are the consistent one there, but it's been a strong rotation, otherwise, of who's number two in the Canadian division. And I guess the Calgary Flames are next to jump into that. They'll have to beat the Leafs a couple times or do something, go on a bit of a streak here under Daryl Sutter. Hopefully not, because I got the Habs next, and they can have the top two conversation. But it's a real rotation. It's whoever's playing the hottest. The Canadian division's been wild. It really has been strange. The microscope is very intense. But those games between the Jets and the Leafs are pretty fun. I will say that much. All right. Saturday night, 7 o'clock, there we go. A nice normal start time on Saturday against the Flames. The Habs will be a little bit more rested, and they need to go out and get 2 points in that one. We'll check back in after that. Till then, take care.